Welcome back to Shy You Perceive Podcast. I have missed you, and I am so excited today. I am closing out season three with an amazing, meaningful, purposeful guest here, Mr. Ron Walker. Let me tell you who this young man is. He is an author of over a dozen books. He is ordained and licensed minister. Mr. Walker holds degrees in biblical studies, theology, psychology, and a master's in leadership. He has been ministering for over 15 years. Message has been about faith. Husband, father, entrepreneur. Right now, you have a book coming out pretty soon called Black in America. Welcome to the show, Mr. Walker. Round of applause for you for coming on. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
No. I thank you for agreeing to be on. I really appreciate it. So I clearly didn't do you any justice. I totally messed up your introduction. So please tell my listeners and viewers who you are and what you're all about.
I'm Ron Walker. I'm probably the worst at talking about myself. I hear it from everyone. I'm a writer. I'm a speaker. I'm an entrepreneur, husband, father, all that good stuff. More than anything, I'm just a servant of God. All I do is I try to do the work of the one that sent me from up above, I believe. And that has led me to doing more in the community. I actually recently just ran for a state representative. Unfortunately, didn't win this time, but 2 years from now, I'll be right back at it and I'll get it that time. Mm-hmm. But that's it. I'm just out here trying to do my part. I tell my wife all the time, you know, people have to be patient with me because I feel like I just woke up. So with all this stuff happening in the society, I feel like I just woke up. And I just started being a part of this conversation of what it really means to be Black in America.
So let's go ahead and, you know, dig right into that. I agree with you. I feel many, many people. Well, before I do that, kudos to all that you're doing. It wasn't your time, but look, it was your season to run, but wasn't your time to win. But now you know what it takes and what Absolutely. It looks like. So next time when you do it again and when you win, you know what it feels like, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes just the having that conversation, just making the attempt is what you need to see what you need to do the next time. And I wish more people would acknowledge the fact that sometimes it's not your chance to be that person right now or that thing, but it's the steps you take to become that person, because you took a chance and that's hard to run for office. That takes mm-hmm. a lot. That takes a lot, and I admire you for that. But I do agree with you, because when I found out who you were and I looked into who you are, and I saw that your upcoming book is what caught my attention, Black in America, which is so fitting right now. Like you said, it's so fitting of what's going on and the climate that we're in right now. And I agree with you. And I think many of us who thought we were awake and aware mm-hmm. and in it and living it and fighting the good fight was asleep. Absolutely. Walking around, just being, you know, the same thing day to day. And mm-hmm. then like right now, the past, 60 days, 90 days has been like a punch in the face of, no, you're not. There's mm-hmm. still work to be done. So it's obvious you are a Black man in America. You are a Black man grounded in your faith in America. And I think that has been a struggle right now, a battle within the Black community that bothers me, because you have this divide up until 2020, because 2020 is a whole different beast of its own, of walking away from the church, walking away from, you know, what you were raised to believe for mm-hmm. so many different reasons. How does that make you feel, being a man of the cloth, being a man in ministry and being a Black man and having those questions come at you where, how can you fight the good fight, be a Black man in America and still go by the word of God in the Bible?
Mm. I've been asked that question a few times recently, it seems. And I keep pointing people to, sadly, Old Testament. I'm like, in the Old Testament, there was a lot of fighting, a lot of killing, a lot of stuff that had to be done in order to get to the promised land. Mm-hmm. I said, it seems like we're in those times again. As a person of faith, I know a lot of people point to Jesus saying, you know, turn the other cheek, and you know that we're supposed to be nonviolent and meek and all these kinds of things, and we'll point towards Dr. King. But if you really research Dr. King toward his latter days, he was not as nonviolent as we want to make it seem. In fact, he wasn't killed because of what he was doing with civil rights. It was because of what he started speaking about with the war. He started upsetting the wrong people because of what he was saying. If you really start looking at it, I did a paper for school comparing Malcolm and Martin. And actually, you'll start to see that they were a lot more similar than we actually think about. When you start looking at the Bible, you start looking at a lot of our old civil rights leaders. I actually heard somebody say the other day, if we weren't trying to be such good Christians, we would have probably won the civil rights battle a long time ago. I think there has to be, we have to be able to incorporate both. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with being a Christian and standing up for what's right. In fact, I think that's our Christian duty, is to stand up for what's right. But a lot of times, the fight for what's right doesn't always look like what we've been told it's supposed to look like. And when we start researching, we'll get into the fact that Christianity was in many ways used to keep Black people meek, mild, and docile.
Absolutely. That's the biggest complaint. That's the biggest thing. Like,
it is.
That was used against us. Yes.
But I've been asked by other ministers, other pastors, my wife. She said, with all the studying that you've been doing with slavery and Jim Crow and all the things that I've been looking into lately, she said, how does that make you feel being a Christian? I said, it makes me feel just fine. All we have to do now is realize that we've been looking at things from the wrong perspective. See, I don't know what your listener base is, but hopefully I don't offend anyone. If I do, I'm sorry. But all I know is the truth. If you look at history, we were taught Christianity from a certain, and the dominant culture was taught Christianity from a different perspective. They were taught to be the master. We were taught to be the slave. They were taught to be the conqueror. We were taught to be the conquered. All we have to do as Christians is stop looking at it from the wrong perspective. He said, there's now no difference between Greek and Gentile. There is no difference, I'm sorry, between Greek or Jew, Gentile, all these people, we're all the same, all adopted under adoption. Now we're all able to call him Abba, Father. We're all the same. There is no more slave and captor. We are in charge now. We are joint heirs with Christ. We don't have to sit by and suffer and be beaten down and enslaved and taught that we are less than or three-fifths of or anything subhuman. We all have those same rights. The world just hasn't caught up with the Bible. The world really hasn't caught up with Christianity, but the world is still trying to teach us to look at things from that same old perspective that we are less than. And that's why I don't teach equality. I teach equity. We cannot think that everybody can be treated the same when we didn't all start from the same block. This isn't Monopoly. We don't all start with the same resources in the same place. So we cannot look at things as equal. Just because you treat me or talk to me the same way as you treat or talk to someone else doesn't make us equal when I don't have the same equity. I don't want to just, you know, get on a tangent. But
no, it's fine. You're fine. You're fine. But what you say is safe to say. It's not that we're not looking at it on the other side. I think we're looking at it, many of us are looking at it on the only side that we know. People live mm-hmm. in comfort. And it's easy just to say, it's not right. They taught us this. But, you know, as all of us know, well, I hope, when you do study, anything you study, the Bible, anything, you have to read above and below and all around. And we mm-hmm. all can read the same thing and interpret things a different way. Once you have the power to read and interpret on your own, is up to you now to take those lessons and those teachings and see it from the other side. But until you break the mentality of being suppressed and oppressed, you're not going to be truly able to read those words and that text on the other side of it until you acknowledge, okay, I acknowledge that we're being taught the exact same thing on two different sides. Now it's time for me to realize I'm on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. And anytime you discuss taking away someone's power, because that's what it is. They're going to fight to hold on to it. And mm-hmm. they're not going to have a good argument, of course, but if you continue to fight in the mindset of someone who is secondary or last or less than, you're not going to win. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing I think it's a battle of. It's not about walking away. For me, it's like that's not even should be the battle we're fighting with each other as Black people. Why are we fighting about that? Like, that should be the furthest. We have so many other bigger things to battle. You shouldn't argue with me of what I do on Sunday or on Wednesday, whatever day, or what book I'm reading, when the battle is we're being killed, we're being slaughtered, we're not getting a fair shake, a fair start at all. So why are we fighting amongst each other behind this when that's not even the biggest battle to be fighting right now?
But that's what's been put inside of us since we got to this country. So that became the main thing, is divide and conquer. I talk about in the book, In Black in America, Ubuntu, which is a very old African philosophy of togetherness. So when you look at how we were Black people in Africa, it was all about community. It was about togetherness. If you just look back, even in this country, you'll see when we were the strongest, it was when we were together. Right. When you knew the person that lived next to you, you could go ask for a cup of sugar. I used to go to my next door neighbor's house and get ketchup for my hot dog all the time. Like, it was no problem going down the street, ask for help. Nowadays, like you said, we're divided on everything, all types of little topics. And the reason is because dominant culture and everybody else knows if we keep them separated, they will not. Sorry again, I'm going to get off on a tangent. That's why even with COVID and all this kind of stuff, I really feel like a lot of things are being pushed now to keep us separated, to keep us from talking. Social distancing is good in order to help, you know, squash this thing. But I really feel like a lot of this stuff is being put in place because if we start talking too much, if we start gathering together, if we're in church, if we're in places and we keep talking about what's happening in society, we're going to realize that we can actually do something about it and fight on a different scale. Right now, we're doing as much as we can in the best way we can. But if we were ever really able to get together as one people, there would be no stopping us.
I disagree that with would... you. I disagree with you, though. I disagree with you when I don't feel. I feel more connected now than ever, because you have to force really? Connection because it's forcing the conversation. What to me, what has happened with social distancing and COVID, it has made you have to be more creative in how you communicate. We mm-hmm. have become mm-hmm. so crippled to technology to where all we do is text and social media. And now we're all exhausted with social media because mm-hmm. the news is so sad. It's too much. So now we crave dialogue. We're craving the stimulation of communication and conversation because of the forced isolation. You know, even if you're an introvert or extrovert, if you're made to sit still, as we all know, it's nerve-wracking. I feel mm-hmm. that now we have found better ways to communicate and get the true agenda across. I feel that those of us who felt they didn't have a voice, they're finding their voice right now, because now you can't ignore what is really going on in the world. Beforehand, we all could just get up, turn the TV off, put our phone down, go for a drive, and detach. Mm-hmm. I knew so many people who didn't, I don't watch the news. What do you mean I don't watch the news? They wouldn't watch the news. They wouldn't follow anything going on. They couldn't even tell you when a storm was coming. They were on everything else that's not important. But now we're so connected. It can be too much. But I feel now it's like, okay, we need to have this conversation. And I've had more great conversation about what needs to be done and how do we move forward in the recent few months than I ever had before with people. I think because now there's no way to keep us separated. We're going to find a way to communicate. Beforehand, it was always, we can Zoom, we can call, we can do all these things to communicate now. We don't have to get together. But when we do, it's going to be powerful. But this is now having the conversation that we need to have. I think what's happening in the world is forcing us to not just react, let's think mm-hmm. and talk about it first, in my opinion.
Interesting.
That's just my opinion. I think sometimes we have to move in silence. They don't have to know what we're doing. We need to have a conversation, though. We need to.
And that's more what I was looking at right there, because everything we're doing now, I feel we're having to do it in a public space. So we're not able to get together and gather and meet and discuss things semi-privately. It has to be social media. It has to be Zoom. It has to be on a public forum. But what I found is that doesn't work for everybody. I know a lot of people who have just kind of pulled away. They've become hermits almost. They're just in their home doing their thing. They're not going out. They're not socializing. They're not dealing with a lot of people. So for some, it may have created a platform for them to speak on a different level or continue a conversation or even start a conversation that they've never had before. But there are some people that have just kind of detached. For many, being a pastor, I know for a lot of people, church was really communed with people. When they got together on Sunday, that was the only time they were having contact. So, you know, all the old preachers would be like, touch your neighbor, shake a hand, hug someone. That was the only contact a lot of people were getting. So there are some people now that may not have close families or a lot of friends, and they're just detached. But I mean, there are other people, like I know, like I said, I just woke up to a lot of things because I've been here, I've been home. So I'm on the computer, I'm on my phone, I'm researching, I'm looking into certain things. But for some people, they're just finding new recipes. They're baking bread, you know, they're doing a lot of things that they've never done before, but they're not necessarily in this conversation because they feel, I read someone say the other day, they said, we've been taught that we can't live according to the world's standards. So as Christians, we shouldn't be involved in the protests and everything that's going on.
And that's the problem a lot of people have with Christianity, with Black Christians, the ones that take it where, you know, you don't get involved. And, you know, I call them, that's the ones to me that's like, you know, you're the good one. That's the one to me, white folks, that's a good one. I have a problem with that. And I'm very grounded in my faith. You know, I am grounded, but no one will ever call me a good one because they're never going to. If you look at the way things have been in society for decades, when it comes to the church, politics, local government, Black churches, they always find a few token churches or mm-hmm. ministers or pastors who are going to not, y'all just, let's just band together and be quiet because that's what they want you to do. The problem that I have with Black community, a lot of us, we're not waking up to realize a lot of the behaviors that we have in us are not, like you said, like you alluded to earlier, they're not originally our own behaviors. They were put upon us. And we have now passed those behaviors on generation to generation. You know, mm-hmm. for the longest, we have been in survival mode. We're still in survival mode. We're still like, come home. Mm-hmm. We're not built for what they were built for, fighting the good fight in the 50s and 60s. Some of us right now are not going to sit in somewhere and get food thrown on them and get water hosed. We're not built for it, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because we were taught, do better than me, get out, don't come back. I'm going to work to the bone, blood, sweat, and tears, my child, do better than me, get out, don't come back, don't look back. Mm-hmm. And that's why so many of us forget to pull up and go back and grab and, you know, and to make our own. Like you said, we had our own stores. We had our own communities. They burned them down. They tore them down. They bombed them. That should have been a motivator to keep going, not to fit into what they already have, to keep, you're going to keep bombing. I'm going to keep going. But, you know, when your morale is broken and your spirit Absolutely. Is broken and you have leaders in the church that we look up to still being on that slave mentality of don't ruffle it, we're doing okay. I mean, we're getting killed in churches up until 2 years ago. Guy walks in and killed, 10, 12 people. Mm-hmm. So I think, like you said, we have to, the word of God is there for all of us. It's just how you, you have to flip how you look at it and how you manifest it in your life. That's all.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, I'm a lot different than a lot of the pastors. When I was on with the Taco Brothers, I know you know them.
Yeah.
With them, and they were talking about me and reading off this bio, like, he's a politician. I was like, no, I'm not. I ran for office. I'm a community advocate. I'm not a politician. I don't even look at myself as a pastor, honestly. I run a church. But really, all I'm doing is trying to do my part to help people. I look back at Dr. King, and everybody tried to use Dr. King right now to say, you know, this is the way we should be doing it. But when you really look into his story, you'll find that a lot of churches would not allow Dr. King to come preach there.
Right.
They didn't want him because, like you said, you have good ones that are saying, don't rock the boat. I remember reading his letter from Birmingham jail, and he was talking about how all the other pastors, the people he thought were going to be there to support him, were against him.
Right.
Preachers didn't want him there because a lot of their church notes were held by white banks. So you got to think about this type of thing. Sadly, there is a culture that controls this country. And when you start doing things that are counterproductive to their agenda, they will do everything they have to shut you down. Like you said, there was rioting and lynching, all these things. This is not a black thing. This isn't something we invented. This is something that was used against us to lower our morale. Every time black people grew to prominence or started doing well or started succeeding, like Black Wall Street and so many other places around the country, we found ourselves being bombed, being lynched, having race riots. Race rioting was a thing started by white people.
Yes.
Talk about all that in the book. It was something started by them to knock us back down. The same things we're seeing done now were done even more back then. It's all to destroy our morale, all to destroy our sense of equity and equality. They don't want us to realize the power that we actually have. That togetherness, like you just said, I feel like what you just spoke on is what I'm saying when I say that we're not together. Because we're being taught, hey, go do better than me, go out there. Our sense of family is waning. Our togetherness is not the same as it used to be. We're finding ourselves pulling further and further apart as a culture, as a family, as a community, as a tribe. And we're being taught to be more individualistic. And that's not our normal nature. That's not what we come from. That's not who we are. Our strength is in our togetherness. It's in our unity. But every time we get together, our black pride is, they try to make it synonymous with white supremacy. And it's completely opposite.
Completely different.
Black pride is not the same as supremacy. Wanting to be equal and wanting to be together is not the same as wanting to be in charge and wanting to control another. But that's what this country has always known. White supremacy has always been the main thing. I wrote about President Johnson. Lyndon B. Johnson came and said, this is a country for white men. And as long as I'm president, this will be a government for white men. It's from the top down. And we don't even have to look that far. Look at the news now.
Yeah.
Basically have people in office that are letting you know that this race is better. So I can't look to you for equality because you don't see yourself as equal with me. And then what is equality? Equality is going to be based on your perspective. That goes back to all these court cases of Plessy versus Ferguson and all these different things. It's you determining what's right for me. And that's why I believe we have to get away from that now. That time of begging for equality and begging for our rights.
It's over.
It's over and done.
And we have to stop. We have to stop all this inner fighting, because when you stop and just think about it, we're fighting each other. Like I say all the time, focus, staying focused. Like don't keep stop getting distracted. We're like little kids when you see a laser, like, you know, squirrel, you know, it's like you need to
stay focused. Ooh, a squirrel, yep.
Because at the end of the day, you have to know how to decipher, okay, that's enough. Okay. They're just trying to deliberately distract me to gain my, and then some of us feed into it. Some of us are helping the distraction. And it's like, don't get distracted. There's a bigger battle. There's somebody mm-hmm. just died the other day in police custody again, a Black man. I mean, it's like, it's constantly happening, but we keep
people getting- People die every day.
Oh, we're Black every day. And I'm tired of
just don't know about all of them.
And the thing about it, and what's sad is we have to also ignore the tokens that are put in place to just say, hey, everything's okay. Mm-hmm. It's not what it is. I was watching a quick brief interview with Morgan Freeman saying, I guess he asked him a question about, you know, whatever it was, but he was like, oh, there is no issue with succeeding. Look at us, we've made it. And that's the mentality we have to break, because you made it doesn't mean everyone's going to make it. Morgan Freeman made it as an actor, but how long did it take to get recognized, to get an award, to get decent roles, and not play that regular old thing? But because you got that little inch, you've made it. So now forget the ones who are still trying to make it. They're not doing enough. You're forgetting that we have obstacles in front of us. We were fighting wars that weren't meant for us. We're getting taken from the homes and breaking up families. And so if you have to realize everyone doesn't have the same opportunity. You may have been handed temporary privilege, but you will be reminded really quickly that you are not part of this, of these people, you know? But go ahead.
This is the same old tactics that have been used since day one. Like you said, there was always a token Black. That comes from having one Black person that makes it. Like I was watching Birth of a Nation with Nat Turner and seeing how the people that were in control at that time were using him to preach to his own people.
Yep.
And he finally just got tired of it. If we look back, we'll always see how the dominant culture would take one good one or one person that was doing well and try to prop them up, make them this token of what was possible. Say, look how far he's come. Look how good he's done. And we're having the same thing going on in current times. We have one or two people that make it out, and then dominant culture says, well, look at them. If he made it, you can make it too. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the circumstances that surrounded him making it. I don't know what all he had to sacrifice, what all he had to go through, the relationships he built. And I shouldn't have to look at all those things. When I look at 9 people that didn't make it out of 10, there should be, I mean, if 5 out of 10 made it, maybe we have something. Maybe it's the other 5's fault, you know? But if only 1 out of every 10 is making it, there's a problem with the system. Right. So you can't put one person in front of me and say, look at him, he made it, you should be able to do it too. Because that's not the norm. That's an anomaly. And we cannot base numbers on anomalies. But that's what dominant cultures want you to do. They want you to look at everybody else.
Mr. Walker, you're a father. How many kids do you have? How many children do you have?
2.
A boy and a girl.
12 and 14.
So how has it been for you? Because you're Black every day. You've been Black all your life. You said that you just, you know, you admitted right now, like, I feel like I'm just waking up, just coming out of a fog. How has it been for you raising your children in this world prior to 2020? Because, you know, I think, I'm not sure how old you are, but all of us have had certain things happen in our lives to remind us, wow, there's still work to be done. We, you know, the fight is still going. And right now with the kids being home, they're really, you can't shelter them. You can try to, but you can't shelter them from anything going on. And having a young Black daughter, a young Black son, right now in society, you're seeing both, you know, under attack. Breonna Taylor just innocently getting killed. You have young men, you know, George Floyd and other young men getting innocently killed. So how are you talking to your children about what's going on in the world? What are those conversations like in your home?
What I do is I really try to keep a balanced conversation. When I say I just woke up, I woke up from capitalism. I've been a capitalist all my life. When I was young, I was always taught that the only way for me to make it was to earn enough money to be able to buy my way out, essentially. And that's what we've been taught. But I've learned that even that has its flaws. So I woke up from being an individual and started looking at what it meant to succeed corporately. So what I'm doing is I'm teaching my children how to both succeed individually as well as corporately. So right now, I have them studying the stock market, studying options, trading, all that kind of stuff. And eventually what we're going to do is a small competition between everybody in the household to see who can make the most, and whoever makes the most with our play money will win real money.
Right.
That's on one side. On another side, they're also constantly doing research papers. So my kids never get out of school. See, a lot of people send their kids to school and they're like, oh, that's their education. No, that's part of their education. The real education takes place at home. So when my kids come home, I'm like, hey, so I want you to go study Huey P. Newton today, mm-hmm. and write me a paper on who Huey P. Newton is, why he's significant to the culture, what happened. And now I want to hear your perspectives on what happened. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to teach my children to be free thinkers. Not look at everything from the way that you're being told to look at it, but look at it from all the different perspectives and then create your own. When I send my kids to school, I'm saying, go ask questions. Go, this is how you learn. Ask questions. I don't mind if you challenge things. I saw somebody right the other day. They said, you know, they were talking about how we've always been taught to respect our elders. Me coming up as a country boy, you know, I'm taught, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, respect your elders. To a fault, actually, no matter how you're being treated, no matter what they're saying, you respect your elders. But now you have a people growing up saying, I don't care how old you are. If you talk to me wrong, if you get out of hand, I'm going to get out of hand with you. What I'm saying is there has to be a balance, but you have to realize that a lot of things we've been taught, you can track it all the way back to Jim Crow, honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jim Crow, you were taught there were no Mr. and Mrs. You didn't address a black person with any level of respect. So a lot of our black, our cultural rules and norms, they came from people were enforcing upon us. So you were teaching them how to survive in a white man's world. And realistically, we're looking at things today. We have a different set of rules. I was like going through driving technique the other day, and I said, okay, you see that car pulled over there? You want to slow down a little bit because that might be a cop, that might be a this, that might be a that. And even though you're not speeding, you don't want to give them any reason to come after you. And I had to stop for a minute, and I said, that's only for us, though. That's an additional black rule when driving. And I look back at Jim Crow. Do you know back in Jim Crow time, if you were driving and a white person came to an intersection, they always had the right of way?
Yeah.
That was absolutely crazy to me because I have to now stop, look around, and make sure I'm not going before a white man does. And I look at how we're taught now. We have a different set of rules that we have to follow. When I was younger, the older kids taught me how to survive in this country, essentially. They taught me how not to get killed. They didn't ever teach me to call the police if something went wrong. They just taught me how to avoid trouble.
Survival.
It was survival. Like you said, we're still very much in survival mode because we can't play by the same rules. We can't just up and call the police. Like, I wouldn't call the police on my neighbor because there's a chance that the police now might come and kill my neighbor. And all we had was a small dispute over my dog pooping in their yard. I don't know. And it's sad that I can't wake up and just be a man. I have to wake up and be a black man. I can't just focus on running my business, building my ministry, writing books and marketing. I have to also focus on not getting killed for running a stop sign.
Also, I was talking to a friend of mine, and it was a white gentleman. And we were discussing something, and I was telling him, I said, you have to remember, I said, you will never know. As much as you are fighting the good fight, you know, feeling like this is awful, but you'll still never understand because mm-hmm. you will still walk in privilege of things. You will never have to have that conversation with your children of make sure when you leave the house, you look your best because you'll be judged by how you look.
Absolutely.
Make sure you're always put together because if you look any kind of way, they're not going to give you respect. Unfortunately, that's for anyone with color. And also if you are economically not as well off as someone. You want to make sure you're always clean, you have your hair done, you make sure, young man, make sure you look good, and because you don't want them to think of you in, or look at you any kind of way. Just like I was telling him, the conversation Black men need to have with white women when they date interracially, some men have to tell them, hey, you can't get hot-headed because I can't just come and jump. Like, as much as you love me and you think something is wrong and you want to, that's not right. I can't just jump mm-hmm. and defend you because I may get myself killed, or someone may walk up and see you first and assume the Black man is harassing you. Absolutely. The reaction is different. The protection is different because you have to go on pause. And to back on to what you were saying, you know, we're passing along this behavior of survival thing, and you know, silly us to think we didn't have to do that anymore, but clearly we still have to add in our teaching surviving, unfortunately, because the power is slipping, and now they're fighting back, wanting that power. So now they're finding ways of still, you have to wake up still thinking, will I make it home? Will my son make it home? Will my daughter make it home? Because now I can be sitting in my home and get killed. I can be at a certain stop. The other day, they stopped this car in a parking lot, a woman and her little children all on the ground, face down, wrong vehicle, thought it was a stolen vehicle. How you can't check real quick before you stop me, license plate, all that kind of stuff. You know, and it's sad we have to check how we react to things, but we have to be. We have to be smart about it. And I don't think it's unfortunate. They want us to react a certain type of way. They want the reaction because they want to say, see, I told you that they need to be controlled. I told you they need to be managed. We have to be able to say, look, you're not going to get that out of me. You're not going to distract me with everything going on.
Absolutely.
So with your book, when is it coming out?
It will be out extremely soon. Why I say soon is simply because I don't know the printing schedules anymore. I used to be able to say it'll be out in 2 weeks because I know from the time I send everything off, I know how long it's going to take to come back. Nowadays, we just do not know. That's why I still have everything up for pre-order, because if I say you're ordering something, I want to be able to ship it. So if I say, you know, this is available, that means I have it in hand and I can have it to you. Like I said, I've been a capitalist all my life. I've run several companies and I've run them well, and I've run them truly based on customer service. It's not always about product. It's about experience. You can go to a restaurant and have the best food in your life, but if you have a bad experience, you're probably not going back. On the flip side, you can go and the food can be subpar, but if they make you feel great, you'll give them another chance.
Yeah.
So I always look at the customer service. So when I say the book is on the way, it's coming soon, I don't want to tell you any fibs and say it'll be here in 2 weeks and then it'd be three, you know? So all I can say right now is soon, because with COVID, I don't know.
So with Black in America, this is your latest book coming out soon. Let us know, when did you start it? What was the, okay, I need to write this. You've been Black in America all your life. So tell us, you know, what was the point that made you say, I need to write this book? And what's making your book stand out? Why is it so different than everything else out there right now, discussing being Black in America?
So with this one, it was actually a little different for me, because normally when I do a project, it is based on a lot of times what's going on with me immediately.
Okay.
So like when I went through a divorce, and I was depressed and I was down, and I was just at this point where I wanted to give up. One day I woke up and realized that I wanted to live. I actually went to this point to where I almost committed suicide. I drove out to the woods preparing to end it all, and my mother sent me a text that just simply said, I love you, son. And it gave me the strength to realize I could make it because somebody out there still loved me. And I woke up, and in a couple of days, I wrote the book I Almost Gave Up. And within a week, you know, I had that done and out. And that was one of the more popular books that I've done. With Black in America, it was like this steady buildup. So it was just one thing after another after another. And then when I just completed my last semester of school to actually get my master's. But in order to do my master's project, they asked what topic are you going to study? And I say, you know what? I want to talk about what it means to be Black in America. So that's what sent me on this process of researching all this stuff, because it was just one thing after another. And I know history and I know American history, but I just always felt like something was missing. So the more I dug and the more I researched, I found that there were a lot of things left out. Like, and I know that I'm not the only one. I've been a straight A student. You know, school has always come good, you know, easy to me. When I was in college, I didn't hang out. I didn't party. I was at the library reading. But there's so much I don't know. And the more I learned, the more I realized I don't know. When I actually sat down and read this 13th Amendment and realized that slavery was still legal, my mind was blown. I'm like, what do you mean? 13th Amendment didn't eradicate slavery. It eradicated some forms of it, but still left an opening for slavery to exist even now. So I talk about modern day slavery in the book. I talk about a lot of things in the book that I realize that there's people my age that don't know. My father, I share some things with him, like redlining. What is redlining? Mm-hmm. Redlining is a housing practice. If you watch the movie, oh my goodness, what is the movie with Samuel L. Jackson?
No, I'm talking about
the Bankers.
Yes.
The Banker. Yes. So when their court case is what led to the Fair Housing Act. The Fair Housing Act, up until that point, it was legal to basically keep people out of certain areas. That meant keeping Black people out of better areas. So we were denied the ability to grow wealth through home equity. I needed to do a project to let other people know that there were a lot of things that were going on back then that are still happening right now. I know there's a lot of other books, but they don't tell it like I do. See, that's one thing I learned growing up. See, everybody can tell the same story, but they can't tell it like you.
Right.
So when I tell my story, it's going to be a little bit different. When I disseminate information, it's going to be a little bit different. So some of the things in the book might be the same that people have read before, but they didn't tell it like I told it. So there's also going to be
You better sell your book. That's right. No one's going to tell it. You're going to tell it. You better sell that
book.
No
one can tell my story like me. But there's also some other things that I'm sure people didn't know. I know we've always looked at Lincoln as a friend of ours. Lincoln wasn't a friend of Black people. Lincoln wanted to send Black people away to their own colony. He wanted to set up a whole other country to send Black people away to once slavery ended. Emancipation Proclamation, that wasn't anything to do with how much he loved Black people. That was simply a tactic to help the Union win. There are so many things that we don't know, but if we don't know the past, we are subject to repeat it. So that's why I go into the past, present, and the future of what it means to be Black in America. That's why it's actually the whole title is Healing from the Past, Progressing in the Present, and Building for the Future, because we have to be able to deal with all three of those things. We have to heal from what we've been through. We have to actually observe what we're going through. And then we have to realize where we're going. And that kind of sums up who I am as a person. When I dig into the Bible, when I dig into a book, whether I'm consulting a business, whether I'm preaching at church, I'm going to deal with the past, the present, and the future. Because you have to deal with all three of those things to truly succeed at anything.
Well, I'm excited. To get your book. I've already pre-ordered my copy.
And I thank you for that.
You are welcome. And I'm excited about it because it is true. As many of us know, when it comes to anyone who's Black, brown, or red, the history that is told in these American history books, the snippet, the lies, the glossing over, the beautifying of it, mm-hmm. Indentured servants. We were not indentured servants, if you know what that is. Clearly, that was not us. Other people who were indentured servants. But mm-hmm. The history is ugly, and you know, when you're not able to tell your own history and write your own history, it will not be spoken and relayed the way it should. You know, and as ugly as it is, we have to acknowledge our history is ugly. It's bloody.
Absolutely.
And it's beautiful. And but it's ugly, and there's things that's going on in our culture and in society that we accept as our culture and who we are that is not originally belonging to us. It was implanted in us and birthed in us and cultivated in us to continue. And like you said, if you don't know your past, the present, you're not going to know your future. And we have to, you know, not rewrite, because we can't rewrite it, but we have to write the things and be honest with what went on so we can hopefully make a better life for our children and our children's children. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're going to be Black every day, all day. So we need to make sure that happens. I want to say, Mr. Walker, I really appreciate you and what you're doing and the voice you're putting out there. And it's needed. Even before all that's going on, it's needed. And I appreciate everyone who's waking up. I'm not mad about it. I think the problem, why are you laughing? I think the biggest thing also is we cannot be mad at each other for how we fight. Everyone's not meant to do what you do. This is you. So we as a people, and I've said it before, and I'll keep saying it every show I have to, we have to, as a people, stop looking to someone else to fight something. We all have to fight. It's not them, or it's us. We all have to fight, but you have to fight in the way that is genuine to who you are. If you are the one writing the books, getting the word out, that's what you need to do. So we need that. If you're the one having them on a show so they can talk about the book and say it's the best book in the world, that's what you do. If you're the one saying, let me make sure that the prints are right, that's what you do. If you have to just find what works for you, but let's not put down those who do not fight the same way. But we have to make sure we're all on the same page, because we have a common goal. We have a common agenda. And we have to realize that you can't look to celebrity. You can't look to what they're doing with their pocketbook. What are you doing? And you don't have to be so loud about it. The whole world doesn't have to know what you're doing. Just do it. Because when the world know what you're doing, they're going to find a way to shut it down and stop what you're doing, especially us. So besides Black in America, what else do you have brewing in your head? What's happening next for you?
Next, I'm actually working on doing a type of masterclass, taking it back to business, because one of the more important parts of building, I think, yes, that is in the book too. Malcolm X talking about we have to understand what it means to have our own businesses. So it's important that we have our own stuff. So I'm going back to my business roots and teaching more of how to grow online following, how to better market online. So I'm doing a master class on selling online, selling more product, talking about how I built my ambassador programs and all this kind of stuff that allowed me to be able to sell product. I was able to grow my business. I had about $900. And within about 9 months, I was doing about $250,000 in revenue. And that was all online. I started a store, ended up closing the brick and mortar store and going completely online. We're shipping thousands of dollars to Dubai. I had ambassadors in France. Like I said, Dubai, Europe, Ireland, all over the place, helping me to move my merchandise. And I did all that with $900, working a job I hated. You know, I quit that job, went full-time business. So now I want to help some other people to learn how to do that or how to do it better. Because a part of that freedom is financial freedom. And we have to be able to make our own money. I told somebody, I said, I went 2 years without working, even after I shut my business down, because I had made enough money and put enough to the side and invested enough that I didn't have to earn any more money. I was able to keep going without having to go to work. And I think that's the most important thing that we have to get to. We have to stop living a life of doing what we have to do. Mm-hmm. And we have to get to a place where we can start doing what we want to do. So if you wake up and you don't want to work today, don't work. A lot of us can't protest and we can't get out there and fight on the front lines because we can't afford to miss a day of work.
Right.
So we have to be able to create those other avenues, writing books, doing my podcast, doing all these other things. I have other investments. There's always something generating something. I told my kids, I said, as soon as you get some money, make sure your money get a job. Don't let your money be broke and unemployed.
Yes.
You know, make your money make money.
Right.
So that's why we study the things we do. My son already has written his first book. He already has The Adventures of Super Goose out there and making his own money. My daughter is always doing something to be on the hustle, to be on the grind. So for me, my next thing is this masterclass, teaching my children how to be better in this world. Being a daddy is one of my main focuses right now. Being a better husband, always growing me. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm constantly focusing on trying to make me better. So I have like a dozen other books out there. If you search Ron Walker on Amazon, now there's two. There's a white guy that's bald headed and looks like the white version of me. And I don't know how this happened, but he also has books. And I constantly have to go to Goodreads and say, not that Ron Walker, this Ron Walker. There's a black man on the cover. Why would you attribute it to him? But a lot of them are business related.
He fight, Mr. Walker. So really quickly, and I apologize for not mentioning, you do have your own podcast. What's the podcast name?
Legacy Podcast. So it's named kind of after our church, Legacy Church International. So it's a work in progress. I talked to the other brothers about that, and he said, well, what's your major holdup? I said, time. I have so many other things going on. I just haven't had the time to really put into it like I want to. But it's a work in progress. I tell people all the time, you cannot grow if you don't get started. So I at least wanted to get started so I can learn more. Like you said, I learned the process of running for office. You have to get started. Even if it doesn't work out the way you want it to, if you don't get started, you won't know what you need to change. You know, iTunes Store, it's on Google, it's on all those major outlets. So it can still be found. It's still out there. It's also on authorronwalker.com, so they can just go to my website and check it out as well. It's not as pretty and nice as yours. That's how I told my wife. I said, this is beautiful. This is so nice. Look at this. It's so professional. It's just so well done. Yes, yours.
This is impressive. Oh, that's fun. Mm-hmm. My show.
So we're working.
My other show may not be for your ears, so I will have to send you certain shows for your ears. because I have a non-judgment zone. You are safe with me. I let people say what they have to say. No disrespect, but say what they have to say freely. So I may have to pick and choose. Hey, that don't watch. Don't look.
If you knew my friends, you wouldn't say that.
I'm just saying. I'm trying to keep you.
I don't hang out with people that I think I'm supposed to hang out with. I'll say it like that. I hang out with people. I just hang out with people, period. I like people. So I want to have people around me that are from different walks of life. That's how I can stay tied in to what our community as a whole needs. I don't want to just hang out with preachers. I don't want to just hang out with Christians. I don't want to just hang out with people that believe what I believe, think the way I think. How am I going to grow from that? So I listen to all kinds of stuff. So understand, I used to tell people, I'm like, you know, if you get in my car and reach for a CD, it might be Pasha Bell. It might be 2 Chainz. I don't know. You know, it just depends on where you reach. I'm a country boy.
Keep it diverse. Keep it diverse and stay grounded.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, Mr. Walker, I want you to know you are welcome on the Shiny Pussy podcast anytime. So when the book is dropping and you're sending them out, you're welcome to come back. Any of the work you have, you're welcome here. I will make sure all of my listeners have your links. I'll keep them in the bio in the description for your podcast, your Amazon links to your books, to your son book, to everything will be down there. I want to say I appreciate and I thank you for being a Black man, realizing you have work to do, doing the work, raise your children in the same vein of it. And I see major, major things for you. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much.